you go down this cliff, go left down the cliff, yeah. Left, and then just tumble for a while, and then you should be there.
It's society. They work for each other. They pay each other. They buy houses. They get married, make children.
That just sounds like slavery with extra steps.
I don't know if you've noticed, but our two-party system is boldly looking in the mirror at itself.
I can't wait for the episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire where all the contestants team up and they overpower the host and they share the money.
The message of Occupy Wall Street is I would prefer not to play the existing game.
We are a socialist party and there are social solutions to the problems.
Communal lifestyles, I don't know about that.
No one can tell me what to do.
Wow, you're a real anarchist.
Didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
No words for you puppets of the West. Communism forever.
God, those communists are amazing.
And we're live with the Three Left Show. Welcome to the Three Left Show. The show that, unlike Hillary Clinton, cares about everyone's vote.
Whoa.
She just, just to start off quick, because it was the last thing I watched before I came here, was a clip of, she was in India. Are you hearing me?
Maybe. We're all up
mics
and going.
Mics are on.
Mics are on, okay.
I'm hearing you.
I was just maybe stunned by that last.
Yeah. Hillary Clinton. Good, good. So she was in India.
Yeah.
And the choice words were, I won in the areas of America that mattered. I won on the coasts, and that's where all the GDP is.
Mm.
And you know, and everyone who didn't vote for me is
because the votes only count if there's money behind it.
That's one way of interpreting
okay.
it. Yes,
yeah, that's how I.
The other way is if you vote for me, you're categorically by default a good person, and if you don't, that means you're a bad person, sexist, and you don't deserve. You deserve to be left behind by the marketplace. That's neoliberalism in a nutshell. There, the ideology that started in the 80s with Reagan that, you know, if you're virtuous, then you succeed in capitalism. If you don't, it must mean you don't have the right values, which you don't have the right values of, you know, of the marketplace, which is, you know, the doggy dog.
Yeah, like it's.
So anyway, that was just a little.
They're with us or against us.
We're for everyone here. We don't want to leave anyone out of our revolution.
So is she okay though? I know she took that ball in India. Is she?
She's doing all right.
Do you think she'll be able to run in the upcoming?
I don't know, but she's not
doing.
It's not good optics, and it's definitely not. It's probably. I mean, it's the same optics that she's always been using, and it's worked great for her so far, right?
She's definitely stayed on the ballot.
Yes, she's been able to be on the ballots, winning in general elections. However,
yeah,
maybe not so much. I mean, she did in fact lose to a game show host, which leads me to this week's
former game show host.
Yes, former game show host. He has given that up, just like all his other business dealings.
Yes,
wink, wink. But this week's Trump update is Trump is still president, and I forgot what kind of quip I was going to make about it. But it's just if you're trying to shame him into doing something, I don't know where your head's at. I think
FYI, I made a
wrong
bet.
Tactics.
I made a bet with a couple coworkers 1 year ago. They said there is no way Trump is going to stay in office. Per year, he's going to get impeached.
Oh, because that's happened, right?
Because like it's been so long.
We've had a president that's been impeached in our lifetime.
So just a humor, I made a bet, and
that they wouldn't be impeached.
Well, what is impeachment? It's just charges being brought up against.
No, and Congress voting to impeach. So it's actually a decision made by Congress.
Okay.
Once a conviction has been reached. Or usually it's done before a conviction can be found. Usually when it's a certain
thing. Okay.
And the fact that it's not certain. And it's also you don't have the votes. So this whole thing like, what, you're going to get 30 Republican congressmen to vote for impeachment. I see. That's why it's like it was always kind of a weird idea to me of like, are you paying attention to the makeup of the government?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's actually it's not a fair. So I'm going to segue now in our first local story. We've got more local stories this week, finally, in our range of topics, because 2 days ago was the mass walkout of students across the country. Many inspirational clips. It was like watching one of those inspirational movies, but actually happening, which is real history. And, you know, and that's kind of the sense I got. Maybe people are getting to that same kind of sense when I was watching the Arab Spring. Like, this is real history. This is like how you actually be a part of history, not just read about it, because I'm a real history nerd. The history is always going on around us. There is no end. It's always changing, because change is the only constant. That's why conservatism makes no sense to me. How are you going to say we want to keep things the same? Or is it just there's some principles you just want to be consistent about? And that's pretty much everyone.
Yeah, like history is yesterday, but tomorrow it's today.
Yeah. And you want to, it's like you want to destroy the future if you want things to be constant. Great. It's like walking in on someone anyway.
In the bathroom, yeah.
In the bathroom. Good point. Good save there.
I'm much better.
Video, I'll share this on our Facebook page, Three Lefts Show. And it's of the Albany High students, particularly the ones that organized the walkout. It was pretty successful. It was several hundred participated. And it was organized by them. Which is the only way it would ever happen. Why? Because you'll notice in the video that none of them were holding signs. And this wasn't their choice. Some of them did make signs. But you see, the administration made a rule that they couldn't hold them while being videotaped walking out. Because some of them were, as they deemed, too political. So...
Oh, and being underage, yeah. They can't be political.
Or if you're going to participate in a civil, lawful, safe manner, like what has just occurred this week in protest, that you should do so in an apolitical manner, nonpartisan. You don't really want the only side you should be on is your individual side for your individual safety. That's kind of the frame, the liberal, moderate, let's call it moderate, the establishment framing of this, or at least the Democratic Party, as they're going to try to co-opt this energy.
So don't think as a whole, just think for yourself and don't.
Well, think collectively. So like if this leads to like other student actions regarding a host of other issues that I would, then I would actually join them. Because as far as campaign for stricter gun control, I'm not there. I'm actually on, I have a nuanced, moderate position when it comes to guns. It's mostly that I don't care. It's that violence is violence is violence. Doesn't matter if it's with guns, knives, drones, nuclear bombs, or fists. Or words. Violence is violence. So if we want less violence, we need to drastically change a lot of things. And not just means to violence, like access to the means of violence. Because obviously our very bodies are a means of violence. Just ask any survivor of domestic abuse. Or someone who's been bullied, i.e. me. I have been bullied. I've been beat up. And... the shock and the trauma of it had nothing to do with any weapon whatsoever. It was done. No weapons were needed. Now, if it was done with a weapon, higher risk of death. But it's apples and oranges to me, meaning they're both fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So just like with bullying, because this is part of the conversation is... some of the response from moderates, actually. So there's even a sector of our society that doesn't even like activism. Or doesn't even like activism where you're breaking any rules. So the fact that walking out was breaking a rule, you're walking out of class, you're... going on strike at least for a few hours.
I always saw that as civil disobedience, right?
Civil disobedience. Nonviolent, civil disobedience, doesn't matter if it's violent or nonviolent, civil disobedience is important.
I'm breaking the law because it's wrong.
Which is why all the students have my support, you know, as far as like I'm with them. And it's a good thing that they did this.
It's a great thing to, yeah.
But what I'm pointing out here is that they were, in fact, limited in what they were even able to do by the schools themselves, even when they're allowed to do a walkout, and maybe they're not being punished by Albany High administration, but they were still being limited in what they could say when they were videotaped, because this was the school district's video that they made. So, and I'm pointing out, and I only learned because of the sign thing, because one of the students in the auditorium that I know so well was holding up their sign, which was basically bashing the NRA. So it wasn't even taking a party side or whatever, or policy even. It was just, NRA bashing. So, but that itself is too political.
So, I mean, realistically, as a whole, the reason why they weren't allowed to carry signs is because they couldn't come up with one message as a whole. Like, if they all made signs that said guns are bad, and every single sign said guns are bad, then do you think the school would have gotten behind them and let them carry their signs?
It's not a matter of that. Although that's usually a criticism of any kind of movement. What's their message? Is it a unified message? Are they all a hive mind?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, it's like a begging question, because in an individualistic society, which these journalists live in, they would prefer no one. There is no collective message to anything, which is interesting to me. As far as the, it's internal contradictions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, people, if it's not picking it up, we've got some action out in
we have a community event happening,
yeah,
in our community art center here.
And so it's got to be a little distracting, at least for me.
So
let me know.
It's a good vibe. It brings the mood.
Yeah, I'll be able to tune it out eventually. I just have to get used to it. Just like anything. We can get used to it. Fascism or what have you. So the primary message, the point is, you know, protesting is not very productive as far as, because our institutions are broken, they are not responsive to protest. Now, civil disobedience comes in many forms. So if the students actually did walkouts, rolling walkouts every day until a demand is met by a particular entity. Maybe. But even then, we just discussed. With West Virginia teachers, it worked. They did not have to strike for a little bit more than a week. And then the state, made a deal. Similarly, Congress would maybe be forced to make a deal if enough students were part of it. But it's big. That's really big. So as far as like maybe state government, I know Governor Cuomo, looking for good press, joined the students at where else? Zuccotti Park to do their die-in.
Yeah.
And he also toured slums in the Bronx and made a frowny face. Why? Because someone very close to him, like a mafia brother, is about to go to jail. So he wants to... That's my cynical interpretation.
They gotta protect the press.
Yeah, and this is after all the other, his neoliberal policies, which basically cause all this stuff. Now, as far as, I sidetracked from tamming down bullying, instead of walk out, don't walk out, says some commentators, walk up to the bullied and make sure and console them and be friends with them so they don't turn into the next mass shooter.
Right. Oh, so buy the kid a candy bar.
Yeah, something like that.
Something, yeah.
And actually, I thought they meant walk up to the bullies who are... Because to me, the mass shooters are the bullies. They're not the bullied, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're outsiders, but so are bullies. They are under their own insecurities and trauma and pain. And
I mean, how do you really know who the... I mean...
I know, sometimes it's just... pure privilege, right?
Yeah.
But that's that's kind of the difference between your disenfranchised Trump voter who's had pretty much they were, you know, their family was riding high on the economic bubble of the mid-century, but it's all gone now thanks to neoliberalism, and your actual neo-fascist, neo-Nazi. I think there are distinctions to be made. So just like there's a distinction to be made with the bully who is, in my experience, poorer than me, has a worse home life than me, I forgave them for beating me up. I just needed to assert myself. It wasn't authorities that were going to fix that. It wasn't punishment for certain, because life was already a punishment for them. I could like see it in the way they dealt with me. You know, nerdy white kid who at least had, you know, some kind of middle class lifestyle, with that kind of privileges that comes with that. I was going to go to college for certain.
And he was just outliving the last 4 good years of his life.
Maybe.
And then.
So, but a kinder school environment is what solves these problems. What can schools do to be kinder? Well, they can make homework unmandatory, remove mandatory homework. The science is clear that homework after a certain point is useless. You don't retain anything, especially for under 14-year-olds. In high school, there's certain advantages, but there's diminishing returns after a certain, like after an hour. Homework shouldn't be more than an hour. There's just removing of punitive actions itself. The fact that, you know, a school is going to solve one person committing violence against another with its own structural violence, i.e. punishments. Just because there's a set of rules behind it doesn't mean it isn't violence. I mean, that's one of the serious takeaways that I want to impinge. Welcome back to the Three Left Show, the show that seeks to be the adult Mr. Rogers. An answer to what does non-toxic masculinity look like?
Mr. Rogers.
Howdy ho there, neighbor.
Hi.
Would you like to learn something about other people today?
Would you like to read a story?
Anyway. But we need something like that for adults, where like someone kind of goes around and visits people like Mr. Rogers did. Let's find something new. Let's talk to like and certainly most programs have elements of that.
Yeah.
But built around this good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Nature.
So we need like an adult Mr. Rogers. Well, Dr. Phil's kind of like that. Dr. Oz. No.
Maybe they want to be.
They
but
try.
They check in. They're not real doctors.
They're not real doctors. That's true.
Phil himself lost his ability to practice when he was harassing his patients.
But he's still on air, right? Like his reruns.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, but it's all like Oprah put them on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Not by their own merits. And because of their own folksiness, you know, and the way he talks.
Yeah.
It's purely kind of feelings. Because I can't...
How do you feel about that, Dan? That's my Dr. Phil impression.
Yeah. It's not that... It's good.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Whatever. It's probably as good as any other.
I've never actually seen it, but
they're bland guys. I mean, him and Oz, and Oz,
he's so hyper,
and that's probably what makes him likable, like any huckster.
Mm-hmm.
But like what he piffles a lot of woo and bad medicine, and
he's almost like a modern day witch doctor.
It's just like how Alex Jones has his Alpha Force pills for your brain.
or Alpha Brain, right?
And mercury pills to protect you from the fluoride. A similar base of bad ideas underpins.
I'm going to sell you this.
TV doctors.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe if it's like there's a show with a panel of doctors, like I think the NPR or maybe WAMC has this, the show, it's like the best of our knowledge.
Okay.
A panel of doctors.
So say there's a show called Doctors, which has like 4 doctors on it.
That's probably a better format.
But it's almost like they're all like Dr. Oz doctors. I think maybe Dr. Oz is one.
So maybe
of
it's the same problems pervade. So let's move on.
Yes, yes.
Good. So another local story. Now, I talked last week, I think, because of the upcoming release of a report about 787 and its future. So I'm going to follow up So in that, I kind of, to summarize, went through my opinions and also what I knew from like when that research started 2 years ago, mind you, 2 years ago. And they said like, well, you know, we won't be able to know in 20 years is when the next time we'll decide what to do. And I could already tell it was kind of futile because like even though they're taking all this input, that they were looking for the path of least resistance. Status quo is status quo. So and this is like my phrase is status quo warriors. They're social justice warriors, and there are status quo warriors. This is from my source is Albany Business Review. They're pretty good at laying out the numbers and costs and because. So nearly $900 million to rebuild Interstate 787 as is. So the shorthand is in 20 years, 787 will need to be rebuilt. It will cost $900 million for sure.
Is that with inflation? I would assume, ooh, right?
Let's assume that they factor in. Maybe they're not complete dunces. And just the maintenance also over the next 20 years is a third of that. $300 million. So after about 20 years, the state would have to look at reconstructing most, if not all, of the facility. It's funny they call the roads facilities. Executive Director of Capital. This is Michael Fraccini, Executive Director of Capital District Transportation Committee. So just to explain, the regional. So okay, as far as regional transportation planning, we have this entity, the Capital District Transportation Committee. And they're a group of bureaucrats, obviously. And they're pretty much tasked with planning transportation. And they don't do a lot of, like, so they're usually the ones hosting any input sessions from in public meetings. They don't do a lot of them. And then I'll go into why their efforts would be, you know, they're like almost like a show pony of an organization, because most of the decisions are made by entities higher up, the state thruway authority, the Fed, and the highways, and the railroads. Amtrak is national, as far as the bus system, that's regional, and that's something, and that's why they're good at reacting to the public will. So in two decades, the highway, it's 50 years old now, and so wear and tear is taking a toll. So, you know, Roman roads,
well, living
they lasted
in New York,
centuries and centuries, and our highways,
I mean, Roman
barely last 50.
Roman roads didn't have plows,
true,
salt erosion,
yeah.
I would think we aren't. I mean, I'm not an expert.
Right, they
on,
didn't
on roads.
Put things on their roadways that destroy them.
Yeah, I mean, we're literally taking a sledgehammer to the road every single time it snows.
And of course, well, I mean, the weight of trucks. And
yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
But it's odd that, you know, all of these materials are tested, by how many times can a truck drive over it before it cracks. And, you know, the materials are apparently, we're told, getting better and better. And then I've read in school of these, like, even ecological roadway materials that aren't made of petroleum products because our roads are made of oil. Everything's made of oil.
What about plastic bags? There's no way. Is that made out of oil?
Well, you can melt down the plastic bags into a gooey mess. Actually, that has been done.
Well, they are made out of oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, they...
No.
It's a petroleum product.
I know. You think you're joking, but I think this was done in Haiti or somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
They took plastic, melted it down, made a road out of it.
Oh, made a road. Oh, no. I was just joking about... You get it.
I get it. We got it. We all get it.
Question is, does everyone get it?
I call it window opportunity when it comes to infrastructure planning, you know, because infrastructure planning is done over decades. Does our input matter? So big question now is, and remember, this is the executive director. This is the regional guy. So this isn't the state bureaucrat. This is the regional one. We should be done in coming years. What should be done in the coming years to avoid having to rebuild the highway? Are the changes feasible in terms of engineering and cost? If so, when will the work be done, and how will it be paid? So let's see. So the report that we're talking about cost 350,000 on its own. And it was released, and it was done by the Transportation Committee. And it provides strategies like eliminating the ramps connecting the Dunn Memorial to the South Mall Expressway, which is literally just that half-mile road going into the plaza. Mm-hmm. An alternative would be a more compact urban design, you know, urban design for cities.
Oh.
With a road at grade level and a new lower bridge replacing the Dunn Memorial. The design could allow for infill development and more public access to the waterfront. So if that's taken on, even on its own, that's a good improvement. Estimated cost of that, though, is unknown. More studies would be needed.
I mean, it's a shame. I really love the way that 787 looks like a matchbox,
a big
set that you got for Christmas.
Or like, a spaghetti bowl.
A spaghetti bowl that just, yeah.
This brings to mind, actually, to a little tangent. In school, I forget it. I don't know if it was in, it wasn't in my school exactly, but I saw a class of urban design students, and one of their sites that they were given that they totally like didn't visit was actually our interchange.
Okay.
At the river, and they were putting stuff in there, in that big spaghetti bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Or around it. And of course, like, these are these abstract projects. And as a local, I just looked at him like with disdain, with squinty eyes. Like, I was kind of fuming at like these students. Like, they don't know this city. They think that's an improvement. Like, they don't even know. And it's just like,
but you'll be able to get from Clinton Ave to I don't know.
You're talking about the skyway.
Improvements, you know. You go on, carry on.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. Yeah, mid rant. It's just that, you know, design, urban design is usually divorced from the actual realities on the ground. And so is some of the thinking used by these higher-up bureaucrats. So a similar... here we go. So one idea that wasn't even considered was tearing down a portion of the highway that runs through the Albany and replacing it with a tunnel. Doing so would eliminate a major obstacle between downtown and Hudson River. It's just too expensive, Frassini said. The problem with anything like a tunnel is the water level of the river. You'd have to protect that tunnel from flooding, et cetera, et cetera. Syracuse is undertaking a similar proposal for their interstate, and that would cost. And they actually measured the cost between $3 and $4.5 billion, with a B. And that's a study that was ordered by the governor, apparently Syracuse is more important than us. They seem to get more attention, but. My analysis is that the committee is setting up a false dichotomy of keep 787 as is and pay another $900 million to keep it and rebuild it, or bury it completely, which is to me unreasonable. Another idea floated on a Facebook feed was just not burying the highway but covering it. Which is a dream of a lot of architects and engineers in the 60s and 70s to not bury car culture and all the trappings of our polluting cities, but just bury them, but not bury like as in sink them in the underground, but cover them by putting roofs and green roofs over them, and because green roofs are really hip, right? It's really sustainable to put a green roof on everything, which is also really expensive.
So by building a roof, though, I mean you would protect your investment later on down the road. You wouldn't have to plow. You wouldn't have to deal with as many potholes.
Yeah, and that's why it was a dream that like it removed a lot of these externalities, these costs.
So by spending, let's say, $50 million on roofing or
But the engineering was just incredible. It was truly like fanciful.
Yeah,
and getting it done, and doing it to like as many roads as possible, and that it's like how is this going to do? How is the market going to take this? And obviously they didn't. Yeah. So let's move on. The Transportation Committee, Regional One, did not look at another big ticket option for 787. This is the one that probably the most people support. Oddly enough, reconstructing a half mile segment between Broadway and Quay Street, and Clinton Ave in Albany, but. Into a boulevard with traffic signals and slower speeds to make it safer for pedestrians across. So, boulevard, making the section, at least along downtown, a boulevard. Now, it's interesting that this it's just a section going from Clinton Ave to basically where the CDC building is, along downtown, but not the south end.
Okay.
The south end still gets to be disconnected from the river, which is interesting because the rezone actually explored all the planning involved with redeveloping that section of town around the highway, because you can go under it. All the streets go under the highway because it's raised, but it's still a force, you know, physical presence that this is, you know, it's disturbing and
it's an eyesore. It's at the end of the day. Right?
Where a boulevard would be better and bring traffic down to street level. But they didn't study this.
I mean, I would think as a...
They didn't study... What did they study? They studied the one part about the connection with the bridge, but they didn't find out what it would cost. And...
I mean, I would think the study for the boulevard would be, although it would be a dream, wouldn't be very logical. I don't think the amount of traffic that goes through that area would...
And of course, like, there's the other things like what's happening up in Cohoes, and there's the Skyway mentioned last week, and so on. So what it comes down to is, like, there's this kind of argument from the status quo where, well, this much traffic, 80,000 cars go over 787 every day. Mm-hmm. And where what's going to happen, you know, and that's taken for granted, as in it will always be that number. There's nothing we can do about that number. It's like that's the default. And yes, removing our interstate means expecting less congestion and traffic, which, you know, we would only do this in conjunction with all the other transportation, mass transit, to get people into the plaza and downtown. That doesn't create these barriers and so car and oil and fossil fuel dependent.
You realistically make the city more pedestrian friendly rather than car friendly. Build a city around
transit friendly, even
vans,
buses, and like it can be done, and it has to be done at the same time, right? You can't just remove the highway and then build a transit system, and we can't build the transit system as long as $900 million. Is set up to be pumped into this in 20 years. Because as far as the state's concerned, that money's already budgeted. It's already baked in. And that's just the imbalance, the inequality between spending on the car infrastructure and that you know, people of this income bracket and up use, and the infrastructure, the mass transit, that people this income bracket and lower use. And that just reinforces inequality. And as if using mass transit is such a horrible thing that only the dregs and the poor are supposed to do, because it's like a punishment. I don't see it as such. I see driving everywhere as a form of punishment, actually. Driving around looking for parking, paying to park your car. It's a lot of space, so much urban space. Albany has a little parklet, you know, fest. Once a year, to kind of like, what could we do with parking spaces if we didn't have so many parking spaces? Obviously, bike lanes, bus lanes, the things that make Albany a transit-centric city. And for a model to know that it can be done, there's a city in Germany called Freiburg where 70% of the residents take mass transit.
Wow.
And it's obviously very high in other European cities as well. And some of the policies are sections of town where cars are banned or just to delivery trucks limited. And they've invested in transit. It should be more 50-50, or even just 20-80. But it's not even that, you know, we don't even have the other bus plus lines. The state isn't putting the money towards it. Like, they have to scramble for money. They have to beg for it.
Yeah. I thought the bus
shouldn't
plus
have to beg for another bus plus line. We need more of them. The one is working great.
It's amazing.
We need more of it.
It's great, yeah.
We need one that runs from Troy to Albany to Cohoes. We need one that runs out to...
Saratoga.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but...
Well, I think so. with all the stops along the way and all the communities, there's no light rail. Rail is coming. It's impossible. That's impossible as far as where it would go and the costs. But we can have a Bus Plus line. We have. That's the thing. The road infrastructure exists. We don't need to lay new rail off and on for it. So this is the Three Left show. The show that knows that if you're to know that offending people means that you're doing something right.
How about the show that woke dreamers up?
Yeah.
Nice.
Woke dreamers up. Oh, yeah.
Made dreamers woke.
Made dreamers woke. There we go.
Okay, cool. Okay.
So next story is on the state level. Goes also fits with the theme we've kind of covered. Cuomo looking for good press, and doing good, actually making the right moves. The things he should have spent the last 8 years doing. If I may be clear,
of the people.
Yeah, not just creating corruption investigations that he shuts down once they investigate his office, and cutting money for all kinds of social programs, and spending a lot more money on tax giveaways and so on, and so on, and because he, you know, wants to be a fiscal conservative, wants to appeal to the quote-unquote base of the Democratic Party, i.e. the ones with the money that fund the campaigns.
Well, yeah, because where else are you going to get?
And so, yeah. So, interestingly enough, someone in his office, who I went to college with, is about to start his congressional campaign in the district south of us. The one that Teachout ran in 2 years ago and lost. Because she was kind of a outsider, but you know, because that seems to be one of the deciding factors. Like, you do need to live in the district and grow up there and be able to speak to the issues of individual people, not just the broad, abstract, you know, issues, and yes. And have a platform relating to those.
Mm-hmm.
I won't speak at length about him, but Gareth Rhodes. I went to college with him. He's one of Cuomo's like PR men, and I find it just both funny and sad and frightening that like he's running for Congress, and like, is he a lamb? Is he doing this of his own volition? Is he doing it as like, you know, Cuomo's office told him to? I mean, I know he's a ladder climber, right? So he's spent the time we've spent out of college, he's spent it in Cuomo's office, one degree or another, ever since he was attorney general. So, long time. So, it's like, you know, he's climbing out. Maybe he's leaving the office, jumping ship. Probably not. But I don't know. But I find it very queer. So,
And just to be clear, he's running in the 19th district.
19th, yeah.
Yep.
Which is the Dutchess. And if he lives in, you know, he might... I can believe that he lives in, say, like Rockland County or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Dutchess. So it's the Hudson, Kingston, New Paltz. So New York plans massive offshore wind expansion.
Oh, nice.
So the good news, the bad news, I'll start with the bad news. The bad news is this is not the announcement of an offshore wind project. We have none. This is the announcement of the planning for offshore wind.
Oh, okay.
So money will be allocated, I believe, or rather, now that it's declared as state policy, any company that seeks to will have an open door to doing it. There won't be any legal barriers or what have you. They'll have the support of state government behind them.
Oh, wow.
Which doesn't always happen because, you see... We only have one existing offshore wind farm in America, at least on the East Coast.
One.
Off of Rhode Island. And the usual reason why... So just for the background, if you're going to get a lot of power from wind, you get it offshore. The wind is always blowing there. It's always blowing strong. And there's no obstructions, and you don't need to truck it up.
There's no mountains in the ocean? There's no trees in the
ocean? Under the ocean, yes.
Oh, okay.
But not on on the waves. You can get wave power too. That's another form of renewable energy. But it's just another form of wind energy, really, because what creates waves? Wind. So, and a mix of solar as well. But anyway, offshore wind.
I thought the
moon
created waves, Dan.
No, that's the tides.
Ah,
tides go in, tides go out.
Science class.
Can't explain it.
I think it's
tides go in, tides go out.
I'm just still stuck on the fact that we
But they
only
make
have...
power. You can make power with the tides. So anyway, it's literally called tidal energy. But anyway,
okay.
Offshore wind. We're talking about offshore wind. So let's see. I'm gonna quote here. It's from Climate Action in partnership with UN Environment. A link to it in the Facebook page, Three Left Show. Under Governor Cuomo's new plans, so it's Cuomo's plans, not put together by him, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he's endorsing them, so it says. New York will build 2,400 megawatts of offshore wind capacity by 2030. Right, so it's a 12-year plan. Capacity enough to supply 1.2 million households with clean energy. Now, of course, what kind of households? Average households, I guess. But what if all households use less energy?
Then
it could be more. If they use more energy than you do now? And then, you know, anyway, so.
Would it be less than Dan?
Hopefully.
Oh, okay.
We can only hope. The so 1 million, that's one-tenth of New York City metropolitan area. So that's not a bad start. But that's after 10 years. The plan is after 10 years to supply.
What about after 12 years when it's finished? Or that's at the end of
the
project?
I guess the goal would be to add another 2,400. But I guess by then the industry will be developed enough that it could be double that. So that's, you know, we're on track to, we're already too late as far as kind of mitigating climate change. But, you know, it is good to stop throwing grease on the fire eventually and convert to renewables. It's just going to take much longer than anyone really wants to. And so maybe by 2050, we'll actually be like over half renewables. But that's the optimistic take, actually.
I mean, bottom line is if we save energy, we can burn more gas.
Like
if we save energy and we invest in, let's say, solar, wind farms, then in the long run, we would have more gas to use in our cars.
Oh. Yeah, isn't that a nice way of thinking about it?
What else am I supposed to do with these?
What are you supposed to do with all the gasoline,
old dinosaurs?
Yeah.
You know?
You keep it in the ground. Keep it in the ground.
I'm learning so much today.
I'm going to be extremely, extremely harsh about this.
I saw a show
We don't take it out of the ground. And, I mean, if we need to stop taking any fossil fuels out of the ground years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's just say for the sake of not polluting and poisoning ourselves and other living creatures, we need to stop doing that. So... New York State offshore wind master plan sees a place for technology creating. I'm not going to list all these dumb numbers. It's basically how much investment, $6 billion, promise of 5,000 new jobs along its supply chain. How permanent are they? How much they pay? These things are just variables. It can also help support the goal of sourcing 50% of the state's electricity from renewables by 2030. So, like, you know, we already get a lot of energy, but not total amount, but it's reaching 15% solar wind of the grid is now renewable.
I was going to say, last thing I've seen is since 2008. That was 3%. But that was back
in... It was 3%.
That was 2008.
I think it's jumped up to 10,
yeah.
Between 10 and 15. I'm not sure the exact number. But it changes. It's growing a little bit more each time. But
oh, no,
I know,
I'm sorry. That was 3%.
Can you look that up?
In transportation.
Well, I'm
going to
keep
yeah.
talking. And
keep
you
going.
Could,
yep.
You could actually look up the stat. We are drawing upon. And by the way, there was a study of a. So with that, it's not enough, but it's a good start. We need to actually build these things, and we need like actual projects, and they need to be funded, and that means the state needs to step up. So that's my call.
solidarity. Then,
yep. Okay, we're back to the second hour of the Three Left Show, the show that speaks uncomfortable truths.
That made me feel uncomfortable.
Good. We all need a little uncomfort, discomfort. Certainly, it's the beginnings of personal change, which we all need in our lives. So with that, can I kick it to you for your story topics, Jeremy?
Sure.
So just so anyone listening, with your drive time, call-in number is 518-290-0038. I'm Dan Platt with Jeremy Brock.
Yeah, this next story is brought to you by fake news. It's money.cnn.com brought you this next article.
If it's just the facts and it's not...
I just find, just looking at the facts.
We can tear it apart.
31,000 Toys R Us employees.
Oh, yes.
No job, no severance. And my question is...
Do you know what's behind the closing of... To catch you up, I saw a few headlines already.
Mm-hmm.
Toys R Us is pretty much going to close entirely. All Toys R Us stores. So all those employees, all the people working for Toys R Us, on the poverty wages they were probably already getting. But, I mean, some of them are probably permanent. So, you said, the retirement savings and whatever.
Where are pedophiles supposed to shop for their...
I'm sure there's plenty of options, but yeah, of course, like they weren't really that great stores to begin with. But the background is Toys R Us as a company was bought, so they weren't, because of the retail market being what it is, shifting towards the internet and whatnot, and more diverse stores, not just a store that's just toys, but Walmart, because that's cheaper and people are just getting poorer. That's just the reality. We're all getting poorer. So they were probably having trouble. So they sold themselves as a company, as an entity, and they were bought by Bain Capital.
Is that the supervillain? Supervillain in Batman comic books?
Close. It's the firm that Romney was a part of.
Oh.
If you recall from 2012.
Now, didn't Romney specialize in buying bankrupt companies and stripping them from all their assets and then selling them out from under the investors?
Very accurate, Jeremy. Okay. Very accurate.
Wow.
And that is what has just happened to Toys R Us.
You're telling me this company that's been... Okay. Newsflash.
Was there any of that in CNN's article?
No. I mean, in CNN's article, they said that...
What did they say? What reasons did they get?
I mean, I guess the whole meaning of the article is the...
It was just...
Flabbergasted...
workers.
Workers realizing that they now actually have to go out and find a real job. Not saying that working with toys isn't a real job, but...
Stocking shelves is real. It's what we do.
I mean, I would work for Toys R Us for free. I would say.
I advise against it. I had a friend who worked for Toys R Us. He absolutely detested it.
Well, then he obviously was not a kid.
I guess
is
it, not.
Is Toys R Us where a kid could be a kid? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, but if you're a worker trying to make ends meet,
no, honestly,
you're given shit. You're given bad hours. Managers that probably make Walmart managers look like benevolent overlords, benevolence, and so on.
So,
but they're left out the dry, like all workers in this market are.
Well, yeah, and I mean that's just what working retail is. Because
the law, and I want to make sure everyone's aware. That everything that just transpired with what Bain Capital did or whatever's happening to Toys R Us, it's all entirely legal. No rule has been broken. No shady business or under the table. You know, this is all out there. This is how things work. And if you don't like it, then you do not like how things work in this country. And it's not a matter of changing some little regulation on what finance industry does to buy up companies and do this, right? The very fact that such an industry exists to basically act as Not vultures, because at least vultures clean up, you know, environment. What was the... Someone pointed out they were like another kind of predator that basically guts prey and makes a mess of things. But that's what it is. These snakes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a predator that would do that.
That's why
in Mother Nature,
the myth of lizard people usually comes to mind. But yes. They don't. They're not. No, they are humans just like you and me.
Almost and like that, a trophy hunter.
Hunters.
Yeah, we could compare them to a trophy hunter.
Maybe.
I'm just trying to think of an animal that's so cruel.
That's in the headlines now too, because Trump's has this. The Wildlife Committee that answers to him. It's all big game hunters, and thus they're changing the rules for their own benefit. Government in action.
Someone's got to kill the lions.
No.
But enough lions have been killed.
You need a new tack of comedy, I have to say. I'm sorry. This whole like, I know it's the easy route, but this is a serious show talking about the real issues.
I will be more serious about lions in the future.
Yeah. Make a joke at the hunter's expense.
Oh, I like
good
that.
Good comedy requires punching up.
I mean, I would say it's sad that you couldn't see my sarcasm over the radio waves.
Yeah.
But I truly am being sarcastic with that.
No. Yeah. No problem. That's not the problem. It's, I don't know. It's awkward.
It does make it awkward. So, I mean, back to...
Tone shift.
Toys R Us.
Was there another... You had another story, right? Or is there more on about from CNN? Because what CNN leaves out is, like, why is this happening to Toys R Us? They'll cover the tragedy, like a shooting, but not why it occurred or how it occurred. Maybe later, maybe with a movement getting attention to it. But, you know, there's deeper reasons why these things happen. And, of course, it's important to realize there are people doing this to these workers. Just like to Hostess, Twinkie Company. You know, where
Bimbo Bread came in and bought.
All the gains from workers in the mid-century are being, like, basically sold off. No rights, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's what I would think capitalism is, and it's the...
It's how it works.
Yeah,
people are making
that's how
money.
It works.
They're making a ton of money. Yeah. And thus they are successful. And in fact, because they're probably making more, you know, generating more dollars for themselves than Toys R Us was making in profit, they're increasing GDP as far as that metric is concerned. GDP doesn't care how many people are actually employed, only how much dollars are actually being created, quote unquote, to speak generally about it. So anyway, what's your story? Hopefully it's a little more light.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really wanted to ask you, what do you think? My other story is actually a local story. I am a fan of the local 518 Vegan page, which is gives lots of vegan support to people who live the vegan lifestyle. But
it's so hard for them.
It's so hard.
No, it's quite easy. Go on.
I would say so someone recently shared a post about a local, and I won't share his name, who needed money for food because he had just lost his job and he had just...
no unemployment benefits?
That's what I wanted to ask. I mean, I know there's lots of...
There's a minimum amount of time.
I guess...
And it's interesting that the employment you get is proportional to what you made at the job. Meaning... If you made minimum wage, you get a minimum amount of unemployment. But if you made higher than minimum, you get a little bit more once you're like, if you're out of work. I find that odd. Or maybe it's the same for every person, but like I would always have to put in what my average income from my old job would be. And I would collect unemployment because it was, in fact, a lack of work. It was seasonal, but it was like it was the opposite of the usual, where one season of the year I would be out. But that was cool. It was like a three-month vacation, and I would make enough, because it was more than minimum, to pay all my bills for the whole year. I lost that, and it was a state job, but it was and it was pretty, it was downsized.
Yeah,
because the governor said the departments had to do more of less. So make someone do the two jobs, and I was extra weight.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would hope down the road.
So I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter at
don't
all.
Don't be bitter. I mean, I would hope down the road state jobs could become more efficient. And
well, efficient is not the same as like more with less. Yes. Is a misnomer. You cannot do more. Like it, if you do do more with less, it proves that you didn't need what you had before, and the same argument could be made again with what you, you know, once you lose using less, you could say like, well, since you actually were, you know, could do the same job, but with other negative outcomes, like let's say more stress. So like, yeah, you're paid less or you're using less paper, but now the job is harder, you know, or, oh, you have less help. You're hiring less help for the summer activity. But now it's harder on the people left. And that was the case. You had to bring in people from like another department to fill in the spaces. And yeah, they weren't doing as much, but these were like older, you know, in the union. They've been in the print shop for decades, and you know, that they're in their 50s and they're close to retirement, and they're being asked to do the line with me, a 20 something. And we're supposed to like make it work, and of course we did, but it was like, again, when you're cutting jobs, you're cutting income from the economy as at all. You're cutting the amount that could be spent by consumers. So how is this economically viable to just keep cutting? Can all companies make that same case? Well, they do. That is one of the contradictions of capital, outlined by Don Marx, that, you know, the goal of firms, including the state, is to cut the cost of labor. And once they do that, once they're able to do that through automation and other such means, then there's no one to buy the goods. Or they need to seek out other markets of people to buy the goods. And thus, us American consumers and workers are dead weight, and we're not needed by the economy anymore. The capitalist economy, and the American upper class will simply work with other rich people abroad, which was pretty much announced in 08 and between 08 and 2012, or with the Occupy movement. One of the big stories was, you know, the 1%, the plutocracy, talking to itself, and it was a report that, you know, the economy has developed to a point where it can be just between rich people. We don't need this 50% poorest anymore. We don't need to employ them. We don't need them to buy what we make. That's the future. So there's going to be a separate economy of our own creation. We can't depend on the banks to fund anything. The shirts on our back. We have to go back to basics almost. But we have all the infrastructure and tools that have been built and given to us by previous generations. So that's one of those deeper issues that's, you know, underneath everything. So what's out of so the vegan story? Sorry.
No, it's okay. Actually, I really liked where you're going with that.
I talked enough though.
My real question was is let's say for someone going through, let's say, 4 weeks of no payment because he's in between jobs. What kind of social programs are out there for him rather than a last resort of making a GoFundMe page and asking for money from the community? I mean, what
is there?
There's
a food bank.
There's a food bank.
But it's like going to a dentist's office. They have a waiting room.
Yeah.
Before you pick up the food, you have to like register. There's like a line.
Okay.
And it's like a waiting room. You have to wait for your number to be called. That's the bureaucracy of the food bank. And it's totally, every method of it is debasing. And then that's, of course, welfare states have always been like this to discipline us to not be poor.
Yeah, make it hard.
As if it was just a matter of attitude and not resources. And that's the other thing about doing more with less. You can't do, to do X, you need X amount of resources. poverty is a lack of resources. It's not a lack of willpower. It's not a lack of even skills. It's lack of resources. Once you have resources, you can either develop your own skill set. You can put the skills you have to use. You know, people don't need to be retrained. They just need resources to do something, even if it's just living. Because even if you're living, you're making children or taking care of other people's children or doing some community project. You're doing something. No one's really just laying around the house. That gets old fast. And you can only see that happening to the people who lay around and watch TV all day are either retired and they put in their decades of work. So whatever. And they have all these health problems. And of course, they're disabled. So, which, you know, things need to be accessible for them if they're going to do things, mm-hmm. which not too much of our society is. I mean, we have the ADA and there's a certain amount that's accessible, but it's not universal for sure. Just think of all the churches that don't have a ramp, you know, and all the facilities.
Well, because God's going to heal them. They won't need it.
Sure.
That's me punching up, Dan. Come on. That's a good punch up.
No, it's fine. No, it's a fine punch up. It's
they're waiting for a miracle.
Yeah. Well, there's an argument against God about, like, why doesn't he heal amputees?
Yeah.
It's one of those emotional pleas.
Well, no, I don't think. I wouldn't hate to get religious on the show, but mm-hmm. I mean, because everything happens for a purpose. So going back to the vegan, I know you've declared yourself as a freegan in the past.
Yes.
Meaning... I don't even think we really have to get into that.
I just had meat for lunch, but it's the you know, third time I've had meat this month.
Yeah, which is extremely respectful, you know.
Yes.
Doing anyway, so
literally one chicken and, you know.
Whatever. If you're really starving, do you really have a moral ground of saying, like, if?
Oh yeah, that's something that's brought up to vegans. Well, that's one of those stock arguments, actually. Mm-hmm. And the usual reply is just, you know, like the kind I would give that seems like a cop-out when it's not. It's just nuanced. This is a systemic one that, like, well, the fact that anyone is able to go hungry is a crime. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that there is no support system, there is no basic universal income, that means that even if you're not working a job... for, you know, in a capitalist enterprise or a state one, which are pretty much the two choices, and you don't have a choice either way,
mm-hmm.
Unless you're growing the food yourself, which is a lot, which is a job pretty much, but you need resources to do that. And I'm part of a gardening project, and to get the resources together to start that together, it's quite daunting.
Yeah.
To get just the soil, tools, seeds. I'm doing it as part of a nonprofit, so we ask for these things, and yes, people will give them to
Thank
us.
Thank God you don't have to look for sunlight, you know? It's like...
Certainly.
Good, you know, at least something's there.
But you still need infrastructure, and do it in the city where the soil is messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Requires a layer of topsoil we got to put on it. And that's a project that I'm learning a lot from. I didn't prepare a quip because I was thinking about our next story, which is actually kind of a mega topic to grow off of the kind of downer and the cynicism that
solidarity,
but solidarity can help us through it. So with an article that kind of speaks to alternatives. What are the alternatives? What are we doing instead? What should we do? And I've teased at it with generalities, but it always helps to have references and examples to think about. So this is from The Nation, a magazine I don't always enjoy, but certainly can have good product when it counts. So,
One Nation under
The Nation, liberal magazine, but center left, more or less. So, define alternatives to capitalism, think small. So the very fact that they actually published an article about alternatives to capitalism, pretty positive to me. So boilerplate, why co-ops, regional currencies, and hackerspaces are pointing the way towards a new economic vision by David Boilier. This is published in August last year, so I've had this saved for quite a while. But it's important, and it goes over. So how do we overcome the pathologies of the economy and our toxic culture that we've kind of discussed? This culture where thousands, tens of thousands can be laid off without a second thought because it has increased the stock portfolio of
men
like Romney.
Yeah.
Who's, I think, going to run for Senate again? Utah.
I would think, yeah.
Because he needs something to do. He's very bored.
Because cutting people's jobs only takes
so much
effort. So many time, yeah. I mean, you do something during the day, you have to do something at night. How else do you compete with Batman?
Outline. So this is my notes, and then there's what it actually says. So, you know, neoliberal economics is dominant in America. And let's see, our resistance lacks, you know, real examples and models to use. You know, what does resistance to Trump look like? Main platform like the Bernie Cap platform, you know, you've got single payer health care, get profit out of health care, get profit out of public goods, things that are about the general welfare. That's a very good start. It liberates us in certain aspects, but it isn't completely liberatory. It doesn't free us from all of these insecurities overall. So we need a new paradigm, one that the existing structures around us can't deliver. And by existing structures, I am in fact referring, and this article does too, to liberal democracy with its two-party system, the structure, the entities of the for-profit corporation, the standard nonprofit, even, which has to go through all the process and be dependent on the state for grants and so on, and has a lot of strings attached. So a new paradigm. How can we reap the benefits of digital technologies and artificial intelligence without exacerbating unemployment, inequality, and social marginalization? How do we deal with the threats posed by global capital and right-wing nationalism to liberal democracy itself? To face such a daunting question, most progressive political conversations still around the detritus churned up by the latest news cycle. But the most outraged opponents of the Trump administration seem to presume that the existing structures of government, law, and policy are up to the job. But they haven't been up to the job, and they won't be up to the job. So we have a bunch of broken pieces, but there are already a number of projects that dare to imagine what a fair, eco-friendly post-growth economy might look like. So there was a word in there I haven't used yet, post-growth. And this is basically in fact. So let's just start with the analogy. A cancer cell is a cell that keeps growing and doesn't know when to stop. And if you think about your own human body, your own bodies, you had growth spurts where you had quick, fast, concentrated growth, and then you plateau. You reach a point where you don't need to grow anymore. You are mature. So a simple question as far as comparing our economy to a biological organism, which if we're talking about economics being natural in any way, based on nature, or even just being natural as far as just existing, when is the U.S. economy mature? Is it mature yet? We have to keep worrying about growth. When have we grown enough? So that's an open question, but for the sake of it, let's just say we have grown enough and we don't need to, because what is growth? Growth means, growth is predicated on, at least as far as history goes, destruction of the environment, exploitation of other peoples, expanding our territory, imperialism, genocide. The challenges before us are not modest, and it's now clear that the answers won't come from Washington. Duh. So let's go with my next point. So, but So if we look at history and kind of common themes over the time, change usually always comes from the periphery of society. And it's on this periphery that new post-capitalist, so not anti-capitalist, and not even, of course, they're more socialist in nature, but we're not calling them, at least the nation and the people doing these things, actually, usually don't call them socialist. They may be socialist, but they're not calling it socialist, because it means something else, usually.
So, like, would Bernie be an example of this, running as a Democratic, you know, in the Democratic Party?
A Democratic socialist? Well, when it comes to social democracy and so on, in the policies I said mentioned, like single payer, healthcare, that is, you know, it, socialism is worker control of things. So if citizens and workers are control of things, to me, that's what makes it socialist. But you don't have to call it socialist, just post-capitalist. It's just a matter of semantics. So post-capitalist institutions, usually under the banner of the commons sector, the commons economy. Economy based on a common, the commons. And the commons
like
are
the common man or the common...
The commons like the land, the air, the water, the things that in principle and practicality can't be owned by, can't be owned privately. Mm. They are accessible just by the fact that, you know, like rivers, who owns them? They're shared by, you know, they're regulated by the municipalities that border them. But the watersheds have their own jurisdictions that supersede mm-hmm. municipalities. So that would be an example
of a common, yep.
Of a commons, watersheds. You can also define it as a social solidarity economy. So I'm just listing buzzwords so we have a vocabulary to talk about these things. One example are hacktivists and their responses to various platforms like Uber and Airbnb. So hackers, hacktivists using, if not blockchain, but they're creating their own platforms that are more user-driven in that you don't have a company just collecting rent by using this app that they made once, right? And maybe they're maintaining it, but the cost is negligible.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Uber make so much money? And by the way, they're actually not making money. They're just taking in all this capital from investors, and that's their income. But they're not actually, their model is actually not profitable. Because it's, when it comes to sharing, if you give what you take, you're not making a profit, right? But yeah. That's what fairness is. Fairness is not profit-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And to be profit-driven is to be unfair.
Yeah.
At least it's my mind.
Yeah, I can
in my
that.
Mind. So that's the argument I'm making. So beyond individual... and come in. We're doing it.
Yeah,
we're live.
At the door.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, and they left just as soon as they
we
came.
We need a light. We need an
on-air light, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe just a sign you flip. Be a little more cost effective.
That would be definitely... We wouldn't have to use electricity.
Yeah, yeah, we could be green.
But
it'd be a red sign.
So, common economy, beyond just individual rights. And, so this is a movement to go beyond conversations about individual rights and expanding people's rights and taxing wealth. Wealth distribution that's based on taxation. Because I take seriously the libertarian position of taxation is theft. There's a truth to it. So property is also theft. To say that the land, which is in common, it belongs to a specific set of people and they can charge for you to live on it, you know, that itself is like a type of taxation. And the country is just a bigger version of that. So this is about kind of getting away from that, or at least going beyond and expanding the conversation. So equity, values of equity, self-governance, and to escape from the evils of our current economy. So various examples are local food movements, the creation of local food systems that are regional in nature. not shipping a salad from another continent, the 3,000-mile salad, not shipping our fruit from or our carrots from Israel.
That one makes sense.
Because I asked about, I think, the carrots grown that are sold in our store. I saw made in Israel. And I asked, it was at the time, Doug, like, why are we ordering carrots from Israel? And he's just like, oh, they're sweeter and they're a little cheaper. And I'm like,
because when you buy a billion of them.
Sweeter from the blood of Palestinians? You know, is that what makes them sweeter?
It's just... When you really...
definitely not following BSD. BSD.
It's like the blood of Christ at, you know, mm-hmm. when you go, I know, to, it's go sweet to a Catholic wine. Church, you know, like it's
sweet
just
wine.
That crispness of the carrots breaking.
Hi, we're live in here. Do you mind? Okay. How's it going? Just taking a look around? Okay, cool. Good to see you.
No worries.
Okay, I wasn't listening to him.
And we're back.
The, I think Vernie's, anyway. The...
We just need that sign, that's all.
Yeah,
that,
yeah. We'd see the event that the union laborer, I don't know exactly what it is. I think it's the construction.
Yeah, I think it's the construction union.
Union. They're meeting local. Outside, having a party, it's great.
It is great. It is.
But we need to let them know that we're in here. The... Let's see. Okay, another is local currency systems. In the Berkshires, there's the Berkshares. Ithaca has Ithaca dollars. These are local currencies where they're entirely made up as far as they they're basically a set of money that's issued to people, and it's like you can only use this at local businesses that are participating in this program, and so it's encouraging local buying because if you use this money on the rate that we're using it, it's a little cheaper to buy things than if you're using U.S. dollars. There's other facets. Maybe I'm not explaining it great, but
each of
these things is its own topic. What hacktivists do, the creation of platform co-ops, which are platform co-ops are simply the alternative to your Ubers and your Airbnbs. If we were to have them, which I guess they're legal now, they are legal.
We finally made it in upstate New York.
We can have platform co-ops too. And it's like, okay, this needs to be developed stat, you know, or to have a taxi company.
By the way,
that's also a co-op.
Shout out to Cuomo for
the epic
buildup of waiting for it. I mean,
they got
to iron out all the kinks, and this is me being sarcastic again.
Yeah.
The fact that it
took kinks
us.
Are there. And of course, how many are using it? So it's enough, I guess. It's in, you know, the only people pushing for it were like the bars.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I can see.
So that section of the economy that there's always money to be made.
Always money to be made.
Drinking.
Down the road.
In a historical context. Oh yeah, so to put it in historical context, with a minute left. So in the big wave of change of social change that came about during the 60s, the big innovation was the creation of public interest organizations. These were the entities that got us the first environmental regulations that still operate today, but they're part of the system that is failing us. They're not able to deliver. They're treading water. Or they're just staffed and run and managed and serve older populations. They're made up of the aging baby boomers that founded them. I think the group comes to mind, you know, environmental organizations. You know, what can they, you know, they have failed to stop the current, you know, the way the, you know, they couldn't
stop
stop the fracking. Only new movements with new organizations, you know, which were also public interest, I suppose. So when it comes to these reforms or stopping the damage, public interest organizations can still succeed, but these are always short-term victories. And they admit that, and they say it's just a fact of life. But that's not good enough for me. I don't want to just have these Pyrrhic victories every decade of my life. You know, and that's why this conversation about the commons economy and what all these things, food systems. So Okay, we're back with the last section of the Three Left Show. I'm your host, Dan Platt, with Brock. With Jeremy Brock. I said your last name first.
Brock is such a bad name nowadays. It doesn't have
Brock, the class. Obama. The gym leader, president.
Well, Pokemon I was joke. Yeah, I could see that for sure.
So back into this Nation article, now into the specifics. I'm gonna actually be more focused and actually read some of these paragraphs. So in fact, what local movements have done over the past few decades, faced with a long list of agribusiness horrors, pesticides, processed foods, monoculture farming, seed monopolies, that's from Monsanto, a loss of biodiversity and more, countless champions of localism retrench themselves to create a semi-autonomous, parallel economy on their own terms, more community-oriented, fair-minded, and humane, and of course, ecologically respectful. So today there are more than 1,650 what are called community-supported agriculture projects, acronym CSAs, and more than 8,000 local farmers markets across the country. So just the fact that farmers markets exist here in Albany is part of that. Organic farming is a robust market center, and agroecology and permaculture are pointing the way to eco-friendly approaches. I've read many things about this, and in each article about new practices, like no-till farming, because when you till, you are, in fact, ripping up the soil, and just planting things over to recharge it, having recharge crops. So in California, the Food Commons Fresno Project is one of the most ambitious regional efforts to reimagine the food system from farm to plate. Even though Fresno is located in the heart of prime agriculture lands, the region has been ecologically abused for decades and is a food desert for 500,000 low-income residents and farm workers. The people working the farms are actually food insecure. Isn't that injustice for
us? Yeah, that's...
To develop systematic solutions, the Food Commons has established a network of community-owned trusts that bring together landowners, farmers, food processors, distributors, retailers, and workers to support a shared mission. High quality, safe, locally grown food that everyone can afford. Instead of siphoning away profits to investors, the Food Commons, buzzword, mutualizes financial surpluses on a system-wide scale, reducing market pressures to deplete the soil, exploit farm workers, and degrade the food's quality, or to raise prices. This approach, writes the social thinker John Thackera, quote, marks a radical shift from a narrow focus on the production of food on its own towards a whole system approach in which the interests of farm communities and local people and land, watersheds, and biodiversity are all considered together. Some of these quotes are long-winded, much like people I work with.
It's a long article. I mean, the
Yeah. I encourage you to kind of read it all. I'm going beyond summarizing it by actually kind of reading the explanations, because I think getting that on air is important, because each of these is the topics could be a topic of an entire show, talking about alternative currencies. We mentioned cryptocurrencies one other show.
Yeah,
and we went through two stories on that. This is actually different, but the local currencies have kind of, they haven't grown and expanded, and because there are limits. And I think cryptocurrencies could actually give them the boost to operate. There was an effort to start a local currency in the Albany area called
Altcoin. I'm just making that up. Nope.
No, it was called, good name though, Altcoin. I don't know. It was the Knicker Dollar.
The Knicker Dollar.
Like Knickerbocker.
Okay. I like Owl Bucks. Or how about Owl Bucks?
Owl Bucks.
Or
that's like how Minnesotans pronounce our city.
Yeah.
Albany.
Albany.
So to talk about the local currency, Berkshires, which was the example they're giving, launched in 06 by the Schumacher. Schumacher is the guy who wrote the book Small is Beautiful. And I read most of it. It's pretty good. But it was a work of the 60s. To be,
small.
So it's of its time.
And big is beautiful too.
So it's larger than the rural Berkshires of. Is it though? Is big beautiful? Oh, as far as bodies and other things, sir.
Depending on what you're talking about.
We're talking infrastructure, business. Big business beautiful? No.
No, big business. Big
government. There's a lot of people who don't like big government.
Big banks.
And those, and they, and we can, yeah. So we can all gather around those ideas. So the goal is to strengthen the local economy and community life by re-engineering the flow of money. Anyone can exchange 100 in U.S. currency for 105 worth of Berkshires at any of four banks with a total of 16 branches throughout Berkshire County, and then spend them at 400 participating businesses. Consumers get a 5% bump in purchasing power from this buy local strategy while boosting the regional economy. So I actually was pretty accurate when I described what it was. I actually thought I was being, I was doing it from memory. And there's Ithaca Cash in Ithaca, north of us.
So they would buy these from the banks, right?
Well, I think it's just it has its 100 to 105 exchange rate.
Mm-hmm.
And
just pretty good.
What is it backed by? Is maybe a local bank is backing it, or it's literally like, because what a currency is, a piece of paper. So you're really just changing one piece of paper for another that is worth more to the 400
you're just,
local businesses.
You're promising.
They've agreed to give you a discount.
Yes.
But this is a way of facilitating that discount without all of those stupid paper coupons you got to clip out of the paper and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. It's
it's convenient. I mean, what is currency but to make transactions convenient?
I think it's funny. You're kind of just selling town gift cards, right? To a certain degree, it's like you're making a promise to spend.
There
that
is,
money
I mean, there's
the
a
town.
There's a version of local currency, kind of also time banking, where and this is done in UK, where the municipality, has volunteer programs like the Albany does, mm-hmm. but if you participate in these programs, you get a voucher that is basically like a half off coupon to participating businesses. But it's not, it's a half off. It's not just a little coupon, you know, but it's almost the equivalent of one of those Groupons, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like 80% of a movie, 80% of an ice cream cone, you know? So it's, you're actually getting something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, it's a great deal.
And the business gets, you know, another customer.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a lot of them, if everyone who participated, it's worth
it's a way to combat online currency or online business for sure. Keep the dollar local,
right? Right. To compete, as it were.
Yes. Yeah.
So you're because one system, even though this is a more cooperative, egalitarian social system, it is in competition with the capitalist one. Just as the capitalist system was in competition with the feudalist system, and it competed for centuries of all these small capitalist experiments in the cities of Europe and the Middle East and China, and of course there was a lot of friction within the state, the feudal system, to the point of bloody conflict.
Mm.
That's what the revolutions of the Enlightenment were: capitalism replacing feudalism. The doing away with absolute
power
of monarchs and nobles. Nobles still had a lot of power. They just, or they just, what they did was they just simply took the wealth and then they invested it and became capitalists.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but they were joined by then all these other merchant class capitalists. So less than 10 minutes. So new economy renegades are not shy about engaging with the policy world, but many regard it as a rigged game, no doubt, that won't yield the transformations needed. In the meantime, they ask, why not grow our own greens and make our own gumbo soup? As Franny Lou Hammer's Day, an activist in Louisiana, an organizer there, the focus should be on securing tangible results and greater leverage for change. And protesting gives you no leverage, not on its own. You need the radicals to like kind of to scare them a bit, and you need to be developing your own power. I mean, an analogy I'm going to develop further as I once get some other memes is that the left needs to be like an RPG party. You have a tank to take on threats. Those are your mass movements. You have your mage that casts area of effect, magic boosting. And that's kind of what media is. Area effect, expanding what the victories of the tank. You have your quick attacker. You have your healer, support structures, and so on.
There's always the combat triangle in classic RPG.
That's weapons, but not right. Like not the not the actual like characters. The,
okay,
the base,
yeah.
The base roles.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the most notable forms may be. Okay, now we'll explain the platform cooperative. A socially constructive alternative to Silicon Valley startups, which famously like to move fast and break things. That's what, the Silicon Valley says. Gig economy companies rely on heaps of capital, proprietary algorithms. Proprietary means they charge you rent for using them. And political muscle to control new markets that leapfrog over government standards for public safety, fair labor, and consumer protection. Platform co-ops are attempting to write a different story. Instead of using networking technologies to extract money from communities for the benefit of investors and speculators. Go ahead. I thought you were telling me to be quiet. Okay, we're almost running. Let's see, we have 5 minutes left. Okay. Sorry, I misinterpreted some body language there. One of the most notable new... I'm repeating myself now. Instead of using... and consumers of share gains. These dynamics play out at Stocksky United, a global co-op of photographers that sells royalty-free stock photos and video, and on service-swapping platforms like TimeBanks, which uses a currency of hours contributed to helping people meet needs and build circles of mutual support. Another Vanguard player is... In Spiral, a New Zealand-based cooperative that developed the popular Lumio platform. I've used it. It is really good for online deliberation and decision-making. They built this out of their experience with the Occupy movement.
Okay.
And so I know what they are. When community commitment and digital platforms come together, they are often give rise to cosmolocal production, as Michael Bowens of the Peer-to-Peer Foundation calls it. This is a new model of manufacturing that allows light, non-proprietary knowledge and design to be collaboratively produced on a global scale. Now, of course, these are all so. And then there's the makerspace in Troy, and then the cooperative office space that's across the street, also in Troy. Mm-hmm. So you have these well-educated engineers kind of starting those projects and creative types. So for at least in their section of the economy, they have these collaborative enterprises. And go ahead.
No, carry on.
I was just running. I'm on a roll, and we're.
They call them what? It's the incubator in downtown Troy, right? Or the
The like kind of business incubator. Yeah. The so these are all experiments, and they're all kind of on their own. Some of them are linked. Some of them are so like how, and usually it's like, well, how we scale up to really compete to be regional, statewide, and it's kind of the wrong question. It's more about scaling out. So you have these experiments, these enterprises, social in nature, and the goal is to federate them, that they create a federation or confederation, like Star Trek, where there's no hierarchy between these projects, but they are connected maybe under an umbrella organization or between with some group of facilitators, and that's what I'm deeply thinking about right now. We have all these social projects and groups in Albany, and they're all kind of they don't work well with each other. And it's not that they hate each other. There's some kind of conflict between what they're doing. That is not the case. I think it's that there's a missing element of facilitation that I think. There needs to be a meta organizer, someone making the events calendar, because someone used to do it, but they stopped, and now there's no shared events calendar. So you have all these groups, protesters, and whatever. They have to contact each other, and it's extra work to make sure they're not scheduling their events over each other, so that you could go to this or that, and not have to choose. But that's usually I usually see it as a problem of like they're all trying to get the same small group of active people to come to their events, and that's where it seems like it's just circling around the drain of an entropying their energy and not getting anywhere. But it's also they could be working on collaborative projects. And for a good example is the aggregating of energy buying power. If all the social organizations in Albany, they could come together, create this entity that then purchases electricity and cuts down their electricity bill with a renewable supplier. So that would be like something like I'm thinking about, like, what maybe I could work on that with PAWS. That's People for United.
So almost have a community, like you said, events, not a planner, but a community planner. So they save costs in the long run. They could plan it all together because
they can't do it on their own because you need a dedicated person kind of doing the outreach. Yeah. Like one organization, a nonprofit, let's say, makes all these different partnerships, dozens of them. Dozens of partnerships. It's a lot of work. I mean, it's kind of what I'm doing right now, and mm-hmm. it's like that itself is a full-time job.
Yeah.
And if can't do it in free time, and it takes away from doing what the actual mission of, like, let's say it's growing food or cooking for someone, so on. So we're in our last minute. So with that, let me go through. This is a Three Left Show on Facebook. Three Left Show. That's it. Just the three words. With a numeral 3. Contact us there. I love feedback. I want to hear more from people if you're listening. Just like the page so I know how many are listening. You could unlike it immediately if you don't actually like us.
And okay, yeah. And unlike, yeah, that's cool. Oh, and Dean, if you're out there from our earlier article, Food Not Bombs this Monday, you get a free vegan meal.
Yes, every Monday, 5 to 6 pretty much.
Yep.
Or 5:30 to 6:30.
And this Monday, Dan's going to play his sax.
I'm going to play my sax. See, I actually set up every week. I'm the underliner for that, so I'm always there.
And where is Food Not Bombs?
It's at 33 Central Ave. 33 Central Ave, that's the Social Justice Center. 33 Central Ave. All right. With that, this has been the Three Left Show. Thank you for listening to us. Solidarity with all of you fine people listening.
Stay solid.
Good night. Enjoy your weekend.